Evening, everybody, and welcome to episode 111 of the Line of Vienna Suite podcast, remaining the world's greatest Bolton Wanderers podcast. I'm Chris, and tonight I'm joined by Will as usual. Will, how are you doing?
Good evening, Chris. I am well, thank you. Are you?
Great stuff. I'm doing just fine. Thank you, mate. I'm doing just fine. And proof that we always follow through on our word, even if it's 2 years too late. We have Tommy. Tommy famously won the Predict the Goal Scorer competition about 2 years ago, with the prize being a slot on this very pod. And due to circumstances and us being highly disorganised, it's taken us this long to get him on. So, Tommy, welcome.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. It's great to be on, finally. yeah, it's taken a while to get on, but it's good to be on. I'm looking forward to having a chat with you.
Brilliant. Yeah, looking forward to having you on, mate. Excellent. And also, we're joined by a special guest, interloper from Ipswich. We've got Ben. Ben, welcome, mate. You all right?
I'm good, lads. Better than you after the week you've had, as we're about to hear, then, yeah?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you are. Ben, just introduce your own podcast to the listeners. I know I've appeared on it before and had a great time. Perhaps it's something you could direct us towards.
Yeah, so the Blue Monday podcast is an Ipswich Town show. We just recorded the show about Bolton, so reasonably balanced, so worth Wanderers fans listening. And also, I do a lot of championship stuff myself at Benjamin Bloom on Twitter, Benjamin Bloom on YouTube.
Fantastic. Yeah, I highly recommend you check your stuff out. It's really entertaining. Great stuff. Okie dokie. So let's start off with the happy news, the happy stuff. We'll talk about QPR for a few minutes now. Obviously, we didn't get a chance to talk about this, given the fact that a lot's gone on in between. But yeah, we won a game. Tommy, come to you first as making your first appearance. We'll put you straight on the spot. Did you expect us to get anything against QPR? And what did you think of the performance?
I wasn't massively confident going into it based on the rest of the way the season's gone. But looking how QPR have played in a few other games this season, I'm not massively surprised that we managed to get a result. It seems like we actually set up pretty well for once. It might have been a bit of an ugly win at times. But then coming off the back of that, I was quite confident after that we might go and pick up a few points. We seemed to play pretty well. But yeah, as the season went as a whole so far, I wasn't massively confident going into it. But it seems like the lads actually did pretty well.
They certainly did, and I certainly wasn't expecting anything from the game. But having watched it on the dodgy box, it was a fantastic performance, one of the best ones of the season by far. Will, same question to you, mate. What did you expect us to get anything beforehand, and what do you think it might have meant going into the game that we had on Saturday against Ipswich?
I didn't at all know. Obviously, I haven't won for what seems like forever. Obviously, the game previous to that was the Wigan battering, so I had absolutely no confidence going into it, especially with it being away and QPR not being much better than ourselves, admittedly, but to an extent, they have been this season in general. And then obviously to follow the updates and see that we were actually going ahead and sitting comfortably with that lead was quite outstanding. I could hardly believe it. So obviously very chuffed for us, the fact that we managed to get that. Obviously it hasn't meant much since in the general scheme of things, but nevertheless it was a vital 3 points.
It certainly was, and it hinted maybe at an upturn in our fortunes, because we thought, and again, Ben, I apologise, I'll say this a few times with respect, we thought that we'd have a good chance when it came against Ipswich, because the performance against QPR was such that it gave us cause for optimism. But then Monday came along, immediately following on, we had Sunday to relax and enjoy ourselves before we were brought straight back down to earth with the first sort of rumours and the first rumblings that the Ipswich game might even be in doubt. God damn, I wish it had been in doubt. With the player strike that the lads decided to embark upon. Now, Will, when did you first hear about that?
Yeah, so I think it was Tuesday, actually, that it came out, and it was
Tuesday,
on Twitter.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah, it was either on Monday or Tuesday. I couldn't quite remember myself, but it seemed to be quite publicised news that the players weren't too happy with, you know, how things were going in terms of whether wages were going to be paid and so on, and quite, you know, fairly to them in sacrifice of that and in good cause, you know, they were quite happy to sort of not hang up their boots exactly, but you know, just say, look, we're not willing to pay unless or until this is sorted, and we could come to some sort of an agreement. To which, obviously, to this day, it still hasn't. But somehow they were talked into playing. They obviously initially went on that 48-hour training strike, and then obviously somehow came to an agreement, whether it's via the PFA, I'm not sure, or whether it's just between them and either Parky or Ken themselves, I'm not sure. but they obviously decided that, you know, there was a good enough incentive behind it to get the game on. And I'm sure that they had a very similar conversation with the staff as well to get them to get to work on the day as well. So, I mean, like you said, it's not exactly a game that I wish I'd actually been on in the end. But yeah, it all sort of come to light on the Monday, and then it was just a hell week since, wasn't it?
Ben, what were the thoughts from an Ipswich point of view? Obviously, you know, it being a fairly big game for both teams, but the first rumblings then came at the start of last week, and were they taken particularly seriously down where you are?
Well, we were sort of following from down here, and I must say, with no hint of blowing smoke up your guys' asses, I was following literally from the courtroom on your Periscope feed, so I think you guys did a great job covering that. Obviously, we knew about the first player strike came way back in pre-season, and we all know about Mr. Anderson, and he's pounds, shillings and pence rather than managing people, and I suspect his idea of how to get around this is, what's my biggest expense? Oh, it's the players. I won't pay the players then. And I know footballers make a load of money, but everybody has expenses. Everybody, you know, if your kid's going to school or you need to put fuel in your car and you've spent lots of your income, you need to be paid. And if a contract says you need to be paid. So I think most football fans are behind the Wanderers players, really. I mean, I obviously don't know even, you know, 10% of probably what you guys know about all of this. But when we see a club like Bolton with their history going into court on a Wednesday with the potential to be liquidated, I think every football fan, you know, I think a lot of the tweets around Ipswich were, okay, moan and whinge about the game, but, you know, this is a bit more serious than that. I think that was the general feeling before the ridiculous shambles that was Friday, it must be said.
Yeah. Absolutely. And to talk about court then, just to move on to that, Will, obviously we've spoken to you at great length on the court podcast, and your coverage of that being there in person was phenomenal. So I'm going to completely ignore you on that topic.
Thanks, Tommy, instead.
Tommy, what did you think about it? I mean, viewing it from wherever you're based, mate, it was obviously a dramatic time for us all, but what was your take on the whole court, all the shenanigans involved?
Yeah, well, obviously, I'm up in Edinburgh in Scotland, so I'm very far away from it all. So I was following your Twitter feed as well, and Will's as well. Speaking to my dad, who's been a lifelong Bolton fan, who got me into it, we kind of came to the opinion that I never thought we were going to get liquidated. I wasn't sure exactly how it would go. I didn't feel that the court would liquidate a club of such stature, of such history. I didn't think that was going to happen. I did not expect them to give us 5 weeks, however. I feel like that we got very, very lucky with that. But now I don't know if that's going to come back to bite us in the arse, whether it's going to take too long now to get anything done, whether admin's going to get put in. We've obviously got this embargo issue as well. Obviously, it was a great result for us in court, and it did give us a bit of time to get things rolling and get this takeover done, if there is going to be one at all. So overall, a good result. I didn't expect them to give us as long as they did. And then again, as I said, I'm not sure if that's actually a benefit or not. But obviously, great news that we weren't going to get liquidated or anything, but it's all still very up in the air at the moment.
Indeed, and time will tell on that one. With regards to Mr. Bassini then, with him being the most commonly thought of forerunner to take over the club, where do you stand on him and his past, Tommy? And I'll ask the same question to you, Will, as well in a minute. Obviously, he's got a very, very checkered history, and Watford fans have not a single positive thing to say about him. It seems to me very much like we're going from the frying pan into the fire, but what's your take on it?
Yeah. And I'd very much agree with that statement, just based on speaking to Watford fans, what people in the media have had to say about him. I'm a strong believer of everyone deserves a second chance, but when you've been bankrupt twice, stopped trading, I know the EFL have now cleared him to do all that, and he's saying that it wasn't entirely his fault. But, I mean, if you're running a football club of that size, you must know what's going on behind the scenes.
Sure.
And it's very obviously, with what he's saying, it's, you've got to take it with a pinch of salt, because that all that has happened. And it's very, very, very hard to believe someone when that's happened before, and he's gone and done what he did at Watford. Obviously, he does have money behind him, he says, but we have no proof of that. Then again, he's saying he wants to do it all himself, so I'm very unsure with how much money he will be able to put in, whether it's just the case of what's happened with Ken, where he's taken over and he's put nothing in. Ken's obviously does have money, but he just refuses to put it in the club. And I'd rather that didn't happen with Bassini. Obviously, we don't want liquidation, but we do need a new owner. But yeah, I'm very, very wary, and I think most Bolton fans are. Seen a few people on Facebook saying, give him a chance, he can't be any worse than Ken. But then we have the opposite argument from Watford fans saying he will do a lot worse than what Ken's done. So I'm a bit unsure of it.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very tough, and we all don't know the whole information behind it. We don't know how much money he actually is going to bring in or anything, so it's very hard to comment on. But I think the general feeling with fans is that this could potentially be worse than what's happened with Ken, but we'll see.
For definite. And I mean, the choice between liquidation and Bassini, then it would seem an obvious one that you would have to go with him.
Of course.
Will, feel free just to espouse on the same topic, mate, before we move on to the next stage in the drama.
Yeah, no problem. Obviously, of course, his appearance in court on Wednesday, or supposed appearance even, obviously shed light on the matter, and you would have thought, like you said, that he was going to be a forerunner in proceedings. Since then, it's not really developed other than him going to the press and espousing how much he's going to, you know, redeem the club and take us back to the glory days. And then obviously he was due at the game on Saturday, to which he missed supposedly through illness. Having it been his birthday weekend as well, which to an extent you can understand, but I'm not sure how much of it I buy.
We've all been there.
We have all been there. But at the same time, it does, you know, make you worry a little bit as to whether there's another reason behind that. And it, you know, anything such as that does tend to spark worry and concern. So I think we're right in assuming that it could well still go to the down to the line. And whether or not it's going to happen before then is very much up in the air, as Tommy says.
It is, and I'm sure we'll keep everyone appraised as best we possibly can via the site and, of course, via you good self. Now, things moved on. Obviously, we thought by Thursday that everything had been resolved, at least persuading the players to return to duty, because the game appeared to be on. The chairman indicated as much in his fantastic chairman's notes of this week. But then Friday, flipping heck out, I was in a meeting at work. I logged on my phone after I came out of it to about 700 messages on the Line of Vienna group that we have to say that the game again was potentially in doubt. Will, would you mind just talking us through that development?
Yeah, so obviously it was announced at close of play on Friday, to which obviously they'd managed to get through a working day, and then as everyone seemed to have powered down the computers to bugger off home on the dot at 5 o'clock, it seemed to have caused a power surge and cut everyone's power completely. That obviously affected the advertising boards at the ground, as we've seen during the game on Saturday. So it did seem like everyone just sort of laughed it off and just went, oh, okay, yeah, a likely story. And then it did seem to actually be a genuine fault, and technicians were working on it through the night. And the game was very much obviously up in the air as to whether or not it was going to go on in the first place. And to have that on top of it obviously wasn't a great thing. But and then they announced that it would then be on at 1 o'clock in the morning, which I'm sure reached every Bolton fan in plenty of time ahead of the game, and Ipswich fans included, who were obviously getting an early night ahead of the prime early start that they had to make to get to the ground. So obviously not the best of communication, but it's obviously the earliest chance that they had to get it out there. But nevertheless, it wasn't exactly the best of communication outlets as they possibly could have done. But anyway, so obviously managed to find our way around it to some extent and improvised, especially with the advertising boards, and it just seems to be it seems to sum up everything that's been going on at the club recently.
It really does. And Ben, to come on to you on that topic, I know we kind of joked off mic a little bit about the seriousness of this so-called IT fault, but surely by the end of by Friday, you would just shaking your heads collectively down there, given all the trials and tribulations of the previous couple of days ahead of the match.
Well, that was the point when I gave up. And I mean, obviously, the pricing was brilliant for the game. It was £5. So I'd bought a ticket ages and ages ago. But, you know, it had been on It had been off. It had been on. It had been off. And look, if the IT thing was genuine, the IT thing was genuine. But you have to understand that, and this is no fault of Wanderers fans, but you have to understand from our point of view down here, it looked very, very sus when it came out, you know, quote, IT issue. And unfortunately, at that point, I think quite a few Ipswich fans, just me included, I've got a YouTube channel to do. I went on the Birmingham website and bought a ticket for Birmingham Leeds and said, well, if you can't guarantee me the game until 7:30 tomorrow morning with, you know, Ipswich fans and people going through London that way, having to get to Euston before 7:30, it just got a little bit ridiculous. And I, amongst other people, and again, look, I would apologise if it was a genuine fault, but you can understand by the end of the week how... and you know, Bolton is a great club, but you can understand how silly it starts to look. And Ipswich account tweeted at 2:55 a.m. That the game was on. And I know it's fun and people choose to go to football, but all a little bit embarrassing given it's I mean, I don't live in Ipswich. I've got an easier journey anyway, but from Ipswich, sort of 4.5-5 hour run, you know you really want to know where you stand. And unfortunately it did look a little bit shambolic, even though from what you guys are saying it was a genuine issue reported in a timely way. It just came at the end of the wrong week for Bolton,
certainly. And I think that I don't think there's anything in particular obvious to suggest it's untoward, but all circumstances considered, yeah, most definitely it does look as suspicious as you can possibly get. Tommy, to come on to you then, in that case, it's the game that perhaps didn't want to be played. I saw as a quote from one of from Mark Isles, in fact, the Bolton News. Christ, I wish it hadn't have been on. But given everything that went on, were you surprised? I mean, I know the stadium on the day announced an attendance of pushing 18,000, which, having been there, looked absolutely ridiculous. Do you think it might have had a negative effect on the number of people that maybe had bought tickets online in the manner that Ben did and then just didn't bother coming?
I think probably, yeah. I mean, obviously I wasn't at the game, but yeah, based on what you said on attendance there, I had a look at a few people's pictures around from the day and whatnot, and that seemed a bit unrealistic, but I feel like they've been doing that all season anyway. So, I think obviously even if you're in Bolton and you're planning to go to the game the next day, so you're bringing your children, and then there's a doubt the game's going to be on, at £5 a ticket, even if you've already got a couple, you might decide to go and do something else. You might not bother. Yeah. If and then obviously they released it at 1:00-2:00 in the morning, so most people, the majority of people, are not going to be online at that time, so they're not going to check it till they get up. So they've probably made the decision late in the evening that they're going to go and do something else, and I don't blame them really. It just came at the end of a bad week. Obviously. IT difficulties cannot be helped, and things like that do happen. But as Ben said, it was just a bad week for us, and that just put the cherry on the cake, really. I don't blame people for not going, and I think maybe a couple thousand didn't bother going in the end because they didn't know whether it would be on or not, and I wouldn't blame them for that at all.
No, I certainly wish I hadn't bothered. On to the match itself. So obviously, as we know now, Colin Quinn has scored two in the first half. Two very, very straightforward goals to give Ipswich the win over Wanderers, which has just made the relegation battle only more complicated in the respect of who's going to finish in which position. I'm still quite content that the three in there now will remain the three in there. But Will, to talk about the game a little bit first of all, Wanderers came unsurprisingly unchanged given what had happened against QPR the week before.
Yes.
But for the fact it was so drastically different in terms of performance, I don't think you can put that down to the simple fact that they were playing in front of a home crowd that was getting increasingly pissed off with things.
Yeah, no, I don't think you can put that down. So, and obviously you've got the elephant in the room in terms of the unpaid wage and what have you, which will have inevitably had a profound effect on things. But at the same time, you know, you've got to think this is the first time in what seems like forever that Parky's actually gone with an unchanged side. You know, people are taking a bit of an optimism from that based on how they did at QPR, like you say. And then to perform like that in comparison, which I think it just shocks everyone to an extent. And with no disrespect whatsoever, Ben, I think we saw Ipswich as a relatively good chance to get some points on the board. And the fact that, you know, we were just outclassed throughout the game, pretty much, you know, and like you said, the two very straightforward goals that prompted that just mm-hmm. made us, you know, doubt beyond belief how it would be possible to stay up at this point now. And I know we'll come to that later on as to the general consensus of fans' opinions on that. But it didn't make sense somehow, you know, I don't understand how we'll then go into Tuesday and be optimistic whatsoever as to getting even a point out of that. Even in front of a home crowd, like you say, obviously it was a decent turnout with it being the community game. And like you said, like Tommy said, even, I'm sure a couple of thousand or 100 maybe would have been tempted not to go after it was on and off and what have you. But you can't blame the fans for that at all, I don't think.
No, and they'll certainly not be tempted to go again on Tuesday after what transpired. Ben, to talk about Ipswich's season briefly, I mean, bottom of the league, it is what it is. I was quite surprised, though, because I wondered whether the team played quite well, obviously, against Wanderers. Didn't have to play too well to beat us, but I thought there were some interesting players on there. I mean, I thought Emmanuel and Kenlock, the two fullbacks, looked good. What do you think has been the sort of cause of your struggles this season? Because from what I saw, the team played with a bit of freedom. I wonder whether that was because their position seems almost pretty much sealed. And I, correct me if I'm wrong, I think if results go a particular way in the next game or so, I think that might be it for you guys.
Yeah, you're right. We had a home defeat 3-4 games ago now against Reading, lost in the last minute, and that was the one where they were fourth bottom and we were bottom, and the gap mm-hmm. just went to a level where it's like, okay, look, yeah, we're relegated now, this is done. What's gone wrong is that we were playing a style of football under McCarthy last season that, if you do believe in XG and advanced stats, we should have finished 22nd last season anyway. Our goalkeeper performed very well, and amazingly, our strikers performed very well. Waghorn, Garner, McGoldrick and Selina. Obviously, I reel off those names. Selina is at Swansea. McGoldrick just scored his 13th goal of the season for Sheffield United. Garner is at your friends Wigan, and Waghorn went for $5 million to Derby. So basically, even if we kept all of those players, the advanced metrics say we were going to drop down anyway. We then sold all of them, so we basically took all the quality out of a team that wasn't very good already, and you do the maths, you're only going to end up in one position. I accept your point about us playing with a little bit more freedom. It's just a bit of a weird one. I've got the stats in front of me, and it's not that different from a lot of our other games, but we weren't that much superior to you guys. I know you only had two shots on target from 12, but the only difference in this game, really, which we haven't had all season, is, and Colin Quayner is not the, he's not exactly Timu Pukki or Billy Sharp, but that's the first game in ages where we've had a finisher, basically. And I know Wheater lost Quayner for the first goal, but the second goal was an excellent finish, and, you know, we've just not tucked away chances, not even decent chances. They're half chances, and obviously put both of them away. Although what I would say is, anybody doing any job, any type of job in the world, if you haven't been paid, you're talking about going on strike at the start of the week and your company might go bust in the middle of the week, is not good preparation for your players as well. I think, you talk about the drop-off between the QPR performance and the Ipswich performance, that's got to be in the players' heads, and you'd assume your senior players will have been going back and forth, kind of negotiating this with your owner, and that's probably explains the flat performance. But pleasing for us, obviously, only our fourth win of a absolutely appallingly dreadful season. Nice to have a win, and sadly for you guys, it was, well, you were kind of back in it after the QPR game, weren't you? Mm-hmm. But with Rotherham and Millwall winning this past week, it looks like we'll be speaking again next season, guys.
Indeed, and I did particularly enjoy the gallows humour. The Ipswich fans will play you next, play you again. I think that was a line that they came up with many right. times during the game. It is decent, and you got to laugh at this time, especially at this point in the season when things do look so bleak. Hopefully, we can play with a a similar sort of detachment over the next five or six games and try and get a little bit of enjoyment out of it. Will, I'll just stick with you, obviously, at the moment, having attended with the performances. I mean, I did my player ratings this morning. I didn't want to do them last night because I've often found that my reactions in the morning after have been, oh, Christ, why did I do that? But I think I probably would have done something similar. Not many scoring above a 5 out of 10 for that. I thought performances across the board were generally extremely poor. I thought Beavers, Taylor, Williams and Buckley were absolutely appalling. Yeah. The latter, Mr. Buckley, yet another shocking performance from a shocking season. But did you have a read of the ratings? Was there anything you particularly disagreed with?
I just thought you were generous in general. No, I mean, and not to be overly harsh or anything, but to an extent, you know, they were very poor, as you say. And, you know, I think you were generous to give a couple of them fives and sixes. And I think, you know, giving Ozzie a six based on the fact that he actually made an appearance, I actually agree with you on that because it was deserved. And although he didn't play particularly well or have an influential role, the fact that, you know, he managed to make a comeback in a Phil Parkinson side is worth a six in itself. But as for the rest of them, like you say, Buckley was just absolutely horrendous. And you know how much I dislike him as a player and I don't rate him at all. And I just think in general, as a group, they didn't perform whatsoever to an extent which deserves even towards really four or fives. And I think had I been on there, I would have been tempted to give them twos and threes all round at the most.
Yeah, I think there's certainly an argument for it. Tommy, to talk about a couple of players in that list, I mean, I thought Olkowski was quite good in the second half. He did try and get forward a little bit more. But otherwise, just another sort of week of disappointment. Amiobi is the man I want to talk to you about primarily. For such a talented guy, someone that can easily change a game whenever he sees fit, another week passed with another absolutely nothing performance from the man. It's getting to the point now where we can't carry him in any longer, surely. Or, conversely, would you think that we need to keep him because of his quality and what he can do when he feels like it? Could well be something that comes in handy next season.
Yeah, I'm touching on that. I'm not sure whether we would keep him on for League One or not, or try and get rid. I'm not sure how long he has left on his contract now. But he's just so half-arsed most of the time. He turns up maybe one in every 10 games, and he's just not good enough at this level. The annoying thing and the frustrating thing about it is that some weeks he will turn up and he'll play very well and he'll glide past players, he'll maybe score a long range goal, but that happens what maybe one in 12 games, and it's just not good enough at this level. He just doesn't seem bothered half the time. I can get on board with a player that makes mistakes, but he tries to rectify them and he tries hard and you can see the passion there for the team, but he just seems to have lost it a little bit. And as I say, he just does not turn up enough. Whether he'd be better in League One, I'm not too sure. I think he'd probably do very well. He'd probably get past a few more players. He would get a few more goals. So we would maybe look to keep him, but I wouldn't be massively disappointed if we lost him.
No.
I'm just not sure anyone else in the Championship would probably want to buy him. Maybe a couple of teams going up, they might get some better use out of him. But just for us, he just seems to have had his day now, really.
I totally agree. I think that these actions, or his inactions, I should say, for the second goal, just summed up what has been an all-round poor 18 months from the guy. It's a shame because he's clearly got masses and masses of talent, but when you've not got the application, it all just becomes a little bit pointless. One thing I thought couldn't be levelled against the Ipswich players, Ben, to come on to you before we let you go. Chambers, I thought, what an absolute beast he was on Saturday. A player that I've not really come across too much before, but he was everywhere. Really impressed with him. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, so Chambers has been our captain for, you know, it's a bit of a badge of dishonour because he's been the captain at a very bad time for the club. Got shoved out at right back. You know, for I think like two seasons covering. He is not the world's greatest footballer. You know, when you've had Matt Holland as your captain and Jim Magilton, Mick Mills, you know, he's not the player that any of those guys are. But in terms of his leadership and kind of effort and, like you say, sort of, you know, the way he puts his heart and soul into his football, he's very, very... beloved by Ipswich supporters, but it's kind of symptomatic of how we've slipped as a club, because in teams of the past he wouldn't have got in, and he's been a mainstay and a great leader and a great captain for us. But and I think 33 now, he's come out and said, "I'm the captain that took Ipswich down. I want to be the captain to take them back up." So I think I always remember in the 90s when they were comparing, or in the 2000s, Ferguson to Wenger, and they said the best thing Ferguson did was he kept the experienced players around all the time. I think a lot of Ipswich fans would like to see Chambers and Skews, even if they don't play every week, just stay, be at the club, be used, become a coach, you know, become the link between, hopefully, if we can, you know, get back up in the same way you guys did when you went down last, you know, be the link that brings everybody back together.
Yeah, I echo most of the comments you made there about the captaincy. It's certainly something that I feel about Wietse. A lot of it is personality based. You know, people do like his personality, but also I see a person that's been there from right when we were just at the back end of being decent through to the decline, which has taken part of the best part of a decade. So where do you cut the ties? Sometimes you can be a bit too attached to players, I think. And we've spoken on this podcast before about our lack of willingness at Wanderers to cut ties with players who really should have gone a couple of years ago. But that's maybe a conversation for another day. Okay, well, Ben, thank you very much for your time tonight. That's pretty much it, the Ipswich chat. I mean,
yeah, can I just quickly add one more thing, just to say that all football fans are behind and stand alongside Bolton fans. We're all absolutely fed up of seeing silly people looking at the Premier League and the 100 million and the 180 million and making stupid decisions to try and just get that money and gambling with these important institutions like Bolton. No one, I know there's banter in football matches, no one wants to see a club like Bolton in and out of court with winding up order and, you know, the silly statements coming out all the time. So just as long a message to any Bolton fans listening to say that other Championship fans, other football fans are very supportive and very sympathetic. And I just wish Burton Albion got relegated and made a profit. And I just wish some owners, I know Bolton is 10 times the size of Burton and, you know, so is Ipswich, frankly, but I just wish, and Mr. Bassini goes on TalkSport saying, I've got a 4-year plan to get to the Premier League and I just want to bang my head against the wall and say, look, someone come into Bolton, take it over, run it properly, and wherever it ends up, it ends up, but the institution stays, and people who watch Bolton 30 years ago, their children can watch Bolton going forward rather than, you know, this boom or bust, you know, get that 100 million TV money or, you know, the club goes into liquidation. I just thought I wanted to say that as a outside voice coming on your podcast, that a lot of other football supporters have a lot of sympathy for Bolton fans.
That's much appreciated, Ben, and we certainly echo your comments. I think stability is in some ways more valuable than success, than glory, than the money. You know, it'd be nice just to have someone come in and realise, I guess, that a club like Bolton's it's probably a 10-year project. It's not a 3-year project. That realism is what's missing. But thank you very much for your kind words and again for your appearance, Ben. Perhaps you just remind the listeners of your own platforms again just one more time.
Absolutely,
before we let you go.
So you can find me on Twitter at Benjamin Bloom. If you type Benjamin Bloom into YouTube, you can subscribe to YouTube there for general Championship stuff. And if you want to hear our take on the Wanderers game and the events leading up to it, the Blue Monday podcast, which is already up on Acast and iTunes and all that stuff. And with no tone of sarcasm, I will see you guys next year.
Yeah, well, you're very welcome to join us again, Ben, when that time comes. Hopefully you'll be free to accept that. That's great. Thanks very much, Ben.
Thanks so much,
good
Ben.
Good luck on May the 8th.
Cheers, Ben.
Cheers.
Bye.
Okie dokie. So to continue, right, so Sunday brought about very little action. However, one inane-sounding tweet has sparked the whole entire universe of debate. A certain Luca Navarro, fresh off making a 70-80 minute long cameo appearance against Ipswich Town on the Saturday, seemingly plays and scores for Hull City's under-23s. Will, perhaps you could just give us a bit of information about this one, because I'm still scratching my head now about 12 hours later.
I'm just about to embarrass you, Chris. So, Luca Navarro and Luca Connell, two very different players. But nevertheless...
You know what? It's the same Lucas. And I've been up for about 15 hours myself, so go away with yourself and just crack on.
No problem. So Luca Navarro is obviously the player under-23s at Bolton, obviously another upcoming prodigy, similar to Connell himself, another very good player who I think many have given compliment to and are willing him to break into the first team at some point soon. And he's obviously with unannounced and completely unexpectedly gone on and decided that he's now going to go and join up with the Hull camp, which obviously came as a surprise to a lot of people. I honestly wouldn't have been surprised myself, Chris, to see it being Connell, given that his future was very much in doubt and has been very recently.
Came as a surprise to Luca Connell, then, if I've just linked him to Hull for no reason.
Well, I'm sure, according to our very own Thogden, who's told us repeatedly, you know, that he's on trial elsewhere, had it been him, you know, I think that would have come as no surprise, really. And I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it would have just been another kick in the teeth. But the fact that it is Navarro, you know, in no disrespect to him whatsoever, you know, I'm obviously disappointed with the fact that we've let him, you know, join up elsewhere. And, you know, it's a sad state of affairs to see, you know, the academy slowly losing numbers too.
True. And Tommy, your thoughts going into next season? Because I would have thought someone like Navarro and his fellow classmates from the academy would be those that we'd perhaps lean upon if we haven't got pots and pots of cash to spend next season. So what do you think about potentially losing them before then? Obviously, we've got contracts to renew, haven't we? And there's not been a sniff about any players yet. Do you think next season we'll need to rely upon the youth players more?
I think we probably will, and I think it's a good opportunity to kind of get them some game time. If we'd stayed up, I think those players, we'd be looking, if we are going to keep them, we would be looking to loan them out to a League One, League Two side anyway. So I think it's probably at their level. I think it's good to get some youth in the team as well. Whether whoever's in charge then gives them the chance, so that's the big question. I would be very disappointed to see us lose any more youth players to other under-23 sides, or even them breaking through to anyone else, because I think they are quite a valuable asset in League One. As much the same as the Championship, you do have a lot of games. You can play 2 or 3 maybe in a space of 10 days. So I think it is very good to have some youthful legs in there. Obviously keep some experienced people, but I would be very disappointed if we did lose any more youth players to other teams.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Fully agree. And hopefully it's just a matter of him perhaps going on trial and seeing what's what. But I guess we'll find out in due time. Okay, so to bring things completely up to date, obviously we know that there's an embargo deadline tomorrow, and then there's a game against Middlesbrough on Tuesday. So, Will, would you just mind just touching on the embargo deadline for us?
Yeah, of course. So, in other words, given that the wages, I believe, are not paid by tomorrow, then it is understood that the club will enter a 2 transfer window embargo to prevent us from signing any players, which is obviously going to deter potential buyers and future prospective investors, which obviously isn't going to do ourselves any favours on the pitch either, and obviously not being able to bring in any recruits to replace the current useless lot. So, obviously, things aren't looking particularly positive, and given that we've had no updates as to whether or not the players are going to get paid, it's going to be a real kick in the teeth to wake up tomorrow morning to that news, presuming that that is going to be the case. And then, obviously, that will stand us in good stead if it then comes back to court on May the 8th, which, although it does seem a long way away still, we are only actually, you know, a month from it to the day. So, it time's platin, and although we're only, you know, 3 or 4 days on from the last one, you know, time does seem to move very quickly in these stressing times. So, yeah,
it really does. So Middlesbrough on Tuesday, then, Will, just to keep with you, Tommy will come to you in a second. Middlesbrough on Tuesday. So they're also a team in shocking form, having lost, I think it's either 6 or 7 on the spin. Probably the perfect club to play then in that case, as they come to the Reebok to face a Wanderers who are struggling beyond belief. How do you see the game going? Do you think there's any way at all we can get a result, even with Borough's troubles in mind?
No, I think we'll get hammered. They always seem to be our bogey team, De Boer. I think a few people recognise them as that, and they always seem to have a goal scorer in them. I'm not sure whether Jordan Rhodes is still on the books. I don't know if I'm right in saying that. Oh, no, is he at Wednesday now? I'm not sure.
I think he's at Wednesday on loan.
They always seem to have a couple of smart players who always seem to bag a couple of goals against us. And I don't think that there's been a result in recent history against Middlesbrough which has gone our way particularly. Obviously, in the Premier League days, you recall a couple of the ones where we used to put five past them sometimes, even on our trips to the Riverside, which now seems to be somewhat of a fortress, you know, despite the recent issues, like you say. But even at home in front of a crowd, which I expect to be no more than 10, really, given recent results, the recent affairs, and the fact that it will be a cold, rainy Tuesday night, I don't really expect us to have a huge advantage in the form of a home backing. And if anything, it will seem like a closed doors game, which perhaps it should have been at this point.
Yeah, so Tommy, same question to you, mate. I mean, it's the last home game of the season, I should say. We're going on my holidays, but do you see anything that we can possibly get out of the game whatsoever, or do you think it's more the same? Do you think it's going to be another step on the way to confirming relegation? Just give us your thoughts, mate.
I'm with Will on this one. As he touched on there, Borough have always been a bogey team for a number of years now. Obviously, they've not been in great form, but I think they'll come and turn us over. I think after the performance at the weekend, I think most fans now have resigned themselves to going down. There's not much we can do about it. Obviously, brilliant if we can, but I think Borough will come and get a result. And obviously, the whole thing with the players is, I mean, they've had the preparation time now that they have been into training by then, but I just don't see there's any way we'll put anything past them. I don't think we'll score. I think it'll probably be 2-0 Borough.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'd be surprised if we would be able to sort of reverse our fortunes, given how desperately poor Saturday was with time running out now. Okay, that's great. Well, we'll see how we get on that, and then I'm sure we'll discuss it on a podcast not too far in the future. So I'm not sure if you've noticed, Tommy, the Twitter questions that we posed tonight. We'll come to you last on this one, so if you haven't seen it, we'll give you chance to think, but we posted two questions to the supporters tonight. One being, do you think we'll stay up? And two being, who would you like to have as manager next season? So give that some thought. And then, Will, would you mind just reading out some of the responses, please?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
we've got. Then we'll perhaps Tommy and I can both answer when we come to the end.
Yeah, of course. Just sort of going through them now and just having a look. We've got some relatively interesting answers which we've received. But yeah, like you say, Tommy, it'd be good to hear your thoughts before we get cracking on that.
Of course, yeah. So I've had a quick look through some of the answers as well. I think the first question, are we down? I think definitely. I'd be very, very surprised if we stay up now. Obviously, it would be unbelievable. We pulled off a miracle last season. I don't think it's possible again. Just going through, so there's quite some interesting answers on Twitter. Darren Moore's in there. I don't think that's possible, just touching on that. A lot of people saying Kevin Nolan. I don't know what your guys' opinion on that is. I'd love to have Kev back at the club. I just always think when you return to a club that you've done so well for, same when managers return, I just don't know if it ever works out. It's a bit of a fantasy some fans seem to have. I would like to see him at the club in some capacity, but I'm not sure it would work out. And then I don't think Bolton fans would ever want to turn on him and ever see that kind of relationship between him and the club turn sour. But he is a possibility, so I'm not sure what your opinion on him would be. Who else have we got here? A few people saying David Lee. I think if he's done well with the under-23s and whatnot, but I think if he was some sort of good manager, he probably would have been given a position in a lower league by now by someone else. But I'm not adverse to that that option either.
I've changed my mind slightly on David Lee. For a long time, I was of a similar opinion as you in that it's too big a step up from the level of football that he's playing. But I think now, given the manner in which he puts his team together, and given the fact that we're realistically, there's probably going to be a few members of the team that he's either currently picking or knows well from his time managing them, he could well be the right man to bring in and shepherd in that new era. If it does involve us utilising some of the youth options that we've got at our disposal, then who better than a man that knows them intimately? I think that even just to have somebody with an element of positivity could really, really give a change of fortunes, and quite quickly too, because if you hark back to Coyle when he first arrived on that absolute wave of positivity, the first 6-12 months under Coyle were absolutely fantastic. You know, we played some brilliant stuff. We seemed to be going on the right track again. Obviously, that all turned to shit fairly quickly. But yeah. I think that you could look to achieve a similar kind of bump if we were lucky enough to have someone like Lee in there. I certainly don't discount it anymore anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Just having a look at a couple of the other answers. I mean, Chris, on the David Lee front, I think I've been sort of of the opinion that he's a great coach. He obviously knows the younger players a lot better, and I'm sure he'd give them a lot of game time. I'm not sure whether he's the right man for us in terms of long-term management. Obviously, in the past, we've had the experience of some pretty experienced heads, and I'm not sure that, you know, to have somebody who's brand new in terms of, you know, full... I don't know whether it's professional management or whatever, you know, as a full strength first team management. I'm not sure what his performance would be like at that level, but we'd have to see, because I presume that he'd be the interim manager should Parky's reign come to an end anytime soon. So I think it'll give him a taste of things to come, and hopefully in that scenario it'd be a bit similar to the initial run of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at United, but obviously not so much more recently. But
I certainly don't think Parky's going to be going anywhere in the short term. I think
he's the safest manager in England, isn't he?
Yeah, I think to be at the end of the season is pretty much nailed on. So I think the interim manager, perhaps not so much, but I think he'd certainly be in the discussion for permanent manager, definitely.
Yeah, 100%. But I think we sort of shared an opinion on this, Chris, of the fact that I'd like to see Neil Warnock come in and take charge. And although, you know, it's done the rounds that I think he'd be looking at retirement before another job, really. But nevertheless, you know, if he opens his horizons and, you know, following his current spell at Cardiff, if he's willing to take on another job following that, then I'm hoping that we'll be in the running for that. But if not, you know, then it's just down to, you know, whoever's available at that time, I think. And just going through some of the Twitter answers, like you said, so I mean, Kevin Nolan's come up. Rob Green has said that, and he said he doesn't think we'll stay up either. And I think the general gist of this is going to be very pessimistic. Bob Leatherbarrow also says no, and Pep will do. Yeah, go on then. Neil Smith says no and Neil Warnock. Again, obviously, I'm going to back that. Lewis Baldwin has said no, and Darren Moore, again, like you said, Tommy, I don't think that's a very likely possibility. He's obviously done reasonably well at West Brom, but I don't think we've been the running for him necessarily. Alex Boyle said no, and Sam Ricketts, that's an interesting one. Obviously, he's gone into management recently. I don't know what your thoughts on that are, Chris and Tom.
That's an interesting one. He'd certainly know his way around the place. He's doing well at lower league level. He did really well at Wrexham, and he's taken that on now at Shrewsbury. So he's got starting to earn a decent name for himself. Whether it's too soon for a club of this stature, I'm certainly not saying magnitude of the job anymore. But, you know, the responsibilities that come in it as a bigger club.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, if we're allowed to dream, if someone's saying Pep, then believe me, Sam Allardyce would be the head of the queue for me. I mean, what a coup that would be if they could get him on board in some capacity. I think it would take a fair whack of money, no problem. But just getting him back on board would be the boost that I think we've been looking for a hell of a long time. Fingers crossed, anyway, that Sam Allardyce can somehow find his way back.
Yeah, I think that would be an investment more than anything, I think, for the club. You know, just having him in some capacity, like you say, whether or not it's upstairs or whether or not it's at a manager's level, I won't be sure. But it'd be great to have him back in some form. Steve said John Coleman. I think that's a relatively good shout from Accrington Stanley. Obviously done very well getting them promoted, and you know, they've sustained themselves in League One fairly well too, so I wouldn't mind him coming in, to be fair. Obviously a local guy himself, and the current chairman at Accrington, Andy Holt, obviously gives a very good account of him most weekends, and we've seen his famous interviews about him saying, "I don't know why I bother anymore." He's very much of the similar opinion that, you know, referees aren't exactly the better standard in current days. So I'm not just basing it on his opinions of referees, but I just think, nevertheless, he's a great manager, and I wouldn't mind him at Bolton. But let's have a look what else we've got. Alan McCall says, no way we'll stay up, and I'd like to see someone like Kevin Nolan given a chance. Obviously, we discussed that previously. Neil Longworth says, if we stay up, you can have the keys to my house, van and car. Yeah, can we have that in writing, Neil? Chris Dickinson says, no, unfortunately, this chance, I don't think we've got much chance. And he says, if fans were behind him, I'd keep Parky. And I hope the new owner gives...
What?
Yeah, I saw that one. Probably disagree with that.
Yeah. And he says, if fans were behind him, yeah, I'd keep Parky, but I do hope the new owner gives Big Sam the footballing director role and gives Nolan the manager's job if he decides to get rid of Parky, with David Lee moving up as first team coach. It's a relatively good theory.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting. It would show a sort of continuity of thought, wouldn't it, that's probably been lacking.
Yeah,
over the last few years.
I think the latter side of that is actually a very good shout in terms of giving Lee the coach role, obviously very prominent in that role at a younger level. Sam coming upstairs as he sort of hinted at in the near future. Possibly Nolan give him a run at the manager's job. Not sure whether or not he's ready for that. And like you said, Tommy, I wouldn't like to see a destruction of a relationship there necessarily. I think that's the last thing a Bolton fans would want to be doing right now. And another shout for David Lee there at the end as well. So it's all very, it's a very short list. But I think we sort of know that the general outcome in terms of what who we'd be looking at, should we get rid of Parky. And it is likely to be, obviously, David Lee will be at the top of the pile, and then you've got the obvious ones like Nolan and past players like Sam Ricketts, like a couple of you have said. But and then, obviously, Sab will be in there somewhere, but whether or not he's willing to take on that, I'm not sure. But,
it needs to be somebody either out of work or somebody prepared to work for not a great deal, doesn't it, such as promoting internally. I think that's the major criteria. I certainly don't think there's going to be pots of money, and unfortunately, otherwise you'd have to look towards Big Sam as being a dream appointment. But we'll see. We'll certainly see. Okay, brilliant. Thanks, Will. So, lads, anything further to add before we draw things to a close?
Not really, but I just feel like, the next couple of days could be the nail in the coffin if a takeover doesn't go through, and I just feel like, Borough are going to bury us, and if we're in an embargo come that time, I think it's just going to be a hole which we're not going to be able to dig ourselves out of by any means.
No, very difficult. Tommy, over to you, mate.
Yeah, just reiterate what Will said there. I think, the next few days will probably be the final nails in our coffin. Don't see us getting a result at Borough. And then I think it's just a matter of time before we're confirmed to be relegated. I would love it if it wouldn't happen when we play Blackburn away, because that would just be soul destroying.
Sure.
I think, and speak for every fan, we do not want to play them with them having the possibility of putting us down. If we're going to go down, I'll go down to any of the other teams, but not Blackburn away. Would just be the most disastrous end to a shocking season.
I totally agree. Let's hope that doesn't come to pass. Brilliant. Okay, fantastic. Thanks so much for your opinions, and thanks for your contribution as well, Tommy. I'm sorry it's taken so long to get you on, but it's been great. Perhaps you could just let the listeners know where to find you on the internet so they can come and have a chat with you.
Yeah, so you'll see me tagged in the tweet from advertising the podcast for this evening. It's at Trothers92. You'll see me talking all things Bolton and just having a good old moan on Twitter like most people do. I don't go to much of the games because I'm from Scotland, but you'll probably see when I go to a few. So if anyone sees me, wants to come say hello, buy me a pint or whatever, then that's perfect.
I'll be at the front of the queue for that. And I'm sure they'll find you at every techno festival north of the border too.
Of course, yeah. If you ever want to come up to Edinburgh, anyone either, give me a shout. I can show you around. We'll have a pint or whatever. But yeah, don't get to many games, but you'll probably see me on Twitter moaning about Bolton and other things. But yeah, thanks for having me on, lads. It's been brilliant.
No, it's been our pleasure. Will?
Yeah, you can obviously find me at WR1LJ for all sort of Bolton Wanderers goings on. Obviously, upon the court dates and the big days in the future of the history, I'm obviously the man to come to now. You know, Chris says I'm Bolton famous now, so no, I'm joking. Right, yeah, I would have Mr. Bolton. No.
Official media liaison, I believe.
No, I message just I like to be involved. So you know, if ever you have anything to ask, I'm sure we have our reliable sources. And upon myself, and I'll obviously be present at the next one should it come to that. And obviously you can find the podcast on iTunes, which can leave us a very nice review for, otherwise don't bother. And then obviously you can find our ramblings on the website too. Yeah, back to you, Chris. Yes.
Yeah, fantastic. So hopefully we can find our way to fulfill in another podcast after the Middlesbrough game this week, but we'll see how things go. So, as far as I'm concerned, that's it. Give the podcast and the website a follow. Leave a review on iTunes, and we'll look forward to seeing you for episode 112. Now over to Will for the closing, which I absolutely despise.
You're very welcome. So it's time to say goodbye. Say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Tommy.
Goodbye, Tommy.
It's a goodbye from me. C'est la vie.